amendments.
I will, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, and members of the committee. These are the amendments I have before the committee, and I think these are the ones that have been brought to my attention this morning. There's the A2 amendment, which is Daryl Fuller's here on this one, and this deals with a situation where an employer delivers payment to an employee by means other than first-class mail, express mail, or courier service when they deliver it to them by hand. It looks like the ORS 652-150 does not contemplate that in the new language, so Mr. Fuller wanted this amendment, and he could speak to it. And then the A3 amendment is dealing with commissions for an employer at a place that primarily sells motor vehicles or farm implements. It's my understanding that Mr. Fuller also has this amendment and would like to change salesperson to employee and make it clear that this applies to people other than salespersons and in those situations, so it would deal with the employees who do things other than actually selling the cars or farm implements. They might be putting together the financing packages, etc. Mr. Fuller's here on that if you have questions on it. The A6, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, is Bill Perry's here on this, and I think this one should look familiar. It's Senate Bill 332 that deals with garnishments, and I believe you had hearings on this earlier, and Mr. Perry can go through it again if you need a refresher on what it does. Essentially, it has the fees and the processing fees that the garnishee can collect, and I would direct you to Mr. Perry on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Council, why are we hearing this again? Didn't it pass the Senate floor?
That I don't know.
Bill, it must be hung up in the House.
For the record, members of the committee, Mr. Chairman, Bill Perry, Oregon Restaurant Association, it passed the House, and it's in the House side at this point. And so we're
past the Senate.
Past the Senate and then the House side at this point.
Okay, so are the -6 amendments, are they exactly Senate Bill 332?
Senator Walker, Chairman Minnis, yes, I actually pointed out, I know Bowley's here requested a change. It's in there. My understanding is from the first section, it's the corrected version on the first page of the amendments that the Child Support Division wanted. It's my understanding. I haven't heard that from them yet, but I have checked with Bowley, and their section was in there. So it is my intention that the redraft was done from the amended version of Senate Bill 332 that passed.
Okay.
Ms. Kemp?
Senator Ringo.
I carried that bill on the floor. And
you did a fine job.
Thank you very much. Yeah. I don't remember that it said $1 for each week of wages. Did it say that? I was thinking it said $1 per writ of garnish.
No, it's, Mr. Chairman, Senator Ringo, yes, it was $1 per week to be collected at the end. Because the child support actually allows you $5 a month, which was the other one that you could collect under, and we just thought it was cleaner and easier because writs of garnishment are actually based on weekly. All your standards are set on weekly pay periods. And so it's actually less than the child support division because you basically get $4.50 a week instead of $5. But we just thought for law purposes it was cleaner this way.
Yeah. Is this section, are you really focused on child support? As far as
no, it excludes child support because I can already collect. This is all court-mandated or mandated garnishments except for child support, because that's the only one I can currently collect on today.
I see. And what was the other bill number?
332. Senate Bill 332.
All right. Any questions? Or do you have
Mr.
One?
Chairman.
Senator Brady.
Was the bill printed in the House because it was in the Business and Labor Committee when it closed, or what was the story there?
Well, it's Senator Berg, Chairman Minnis, it's in the Rules House Rules Committee, and why it's being hung up, I will let somebody else answer at this point, but it's in the House Rules Committee.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'd kind of be interested to know that, because if that's going to sink this bill over there, I'd rather not do this.
I would say that the guts of this bill is not the issue.
Oh, okay.
I have not heard it at this point besides I think in the committee, obviously Mr. Neville came in and testified against it, but as of right now, I've not heard any other opposition or concerns with the issue that's in front of us today.
Well, I personally, I don't know why it's not working. Anybody out there know?
Only the committee chair over there would know, Mr. Chair.
Okay. What's the next amendment?
The next amendment, Mr. Chairman,
thank
members of committee,
Perry,
is the A8, Senator Burdick's amendment. This amendment would allow an employee who is, as an employer that has 25 or more employees, would have to be allowed, reasonable efforts would have to be made to allow for breastfeeding for that woman's child. This would be unpaid rest periods. And there is a clause that if it would cause an undue hardship, that they would not need to do that. And that's the A8. And I think that, Senator Burdick, I think that the key to this one, as opposed to other amendments, was that it's for those who employ 25 or more persons.
Chair, the AOI opposed this because they didn't like the civil lawsuits and they didn't like the potential hardship on employers, especially small employers. So this addresses both of those. It does not allow civil lawsuits. And it also exempts small employers, so the only employers who are covered are those who are covered under other statutes making workplace requirements.
All right, that's the A9, correct?
That's the A8, Mr. Chairman. And then lastly is the A9, and Doug McKean is here to speak to that one. The basic gist of it is that, as you may or may not know, LC reviews agency OARs to make sure that they're within the statutes and they're constitutional. And Mr. McKean reviewed one of Boley's statutes, or two of their OARs, and found that we needed to change the statute if we were going to keep those rules because they were outside of the definition. It's Doug would do a lot better job of explaining it. So.
Chair, members of the committee, I'm Doug McKean from Legislative Council. I don't know how much depth you want me to go into about the rules or why the agency is proposing this statutory change. Do you want to give me some direction about that?
Well, I'm trying to recall. I said I listed Council Committee as Senator Ringo. The issue, as I recall, is the current statute uses the word willfully in terms of these circumstances, and there was a willful tends to imply that there's some level of intent or prior knowledge, et cetera. And I think the agency wanted to apply some form of strict, I can't remember what it is, the word, strict liability, exactly,
right,
on an employer who violates. And I think this is just trying to clarify
right
what the agency
is. There were two issues, Mr. Chair, that came up in the rules, actually two separate rules. One of the issues was, the relevant statute is ORS 652150, which is the statute in this bill. And that statute says that when an employee's employment ceases, if the employer fails to pay the final wages within the time required by some other final wage statutes, then the employer is liable for penalty wages paid to the employee. And normally that penalty is 8 hours of the employee's regular wages for up to 30 days. So as an example, if the employee claims that he wasn't paid $200 in his final paycheck, and that employee makes $10 an hour, the employee could get $10 an hour, 8 hours a day, $80, for up to 30 days. So the penalty wages could be $2,400, up to $2,400, on that $200 of unpaid final wages. Because of that, in 2001, the Oregon legislature amended 652150 to put a limitation on the amount of penalty wages. And that limitation is this: if the employee fails to send the employer a written notice of the non-payment, or if the employer pays the full unpaid wages within 12 days after the employment ended, then the penalty wages would be limited to the amount of the unpaid final wages.
So in your example, the $200, if they paid it within 12 days, that would be the...
Right. So the employer would owe the $200 in final pages, final wages, and maybe $200 of... up to $200 of penalty wages.
Okay.
Well, that limitation didn't apply in two circumstances. In one, it didn't apply if the employer had willfully violated the final wage laws one or more times in the year before the employee's employment ceased. And the other circumstance was in the case, according to the agency's rule, in the case of multiple simultaneous terminations. Well, the statute didn't say that last piece. So the two issues that I had, LC had with the agency's rules, first were with the way they defined the word willfully, and second with their extension of that on the limitation, the limitation not applying in the case of multiple simultaneous terminations. The amendment, I think it's A9, is meant to address both of those circumstances. The willfully issue, the word willfully is used twice in the statute. It's used first in the first sentence when it says the penalty wages are due if the employer willfully fails to pay. That's a willful act. And the rule says that the word willfully means that a person knows what the person is doing, intends to do what the person is doing, and is a free agent. And if those things are aligned, then the person is acting willfully. And that makes sense with respect to a willful act. In the other part, subsection 3 of...
Just to focus on that instance, for example, what is the presumption then if the paycheck is not mailed or is not delivered? What... How does one prove willfulness?
I think the typical case is the employer pays the final wages of, you know, X amount, $200, and the employee claims that you failed to pay me for my accrued vacation, and you were supposed to do that, and you knew that I had, you know, 20 hours of accrued vacation, and instead you intentionally paid me only my wages and failed to pay me the accrued vacation hours. That would be a willful failure to pay.
But in that case, you have to show that the employer knew that there was accrued vacation and just decided not to.
Right.
I'm trying to figure out what evidence, though, you can use to show that. I mean, obviously, if you had a smoking gun letter, but generally that doesn't happen, and all you have is check arrives and it's not at the right amount. And from, I guess, from the employer's standpoint, I mean, maybe it was a legitimate accounting error.
And Mr. Chair and Senator Ringo, there are lots of court cases out there and scores of Bureau of Final Orders on contested cases that address that issue. And if there is simply a miscalculation on the employer's part or some accident, willfully doesn't get to those circumstances. Willfully is usually proved, if I can recall from those cases, when it's clear that the employer knew what the proper hourly wage was, knew how many hours the employee had worked, and yet still didn't pay final wages for all those hours. Well, oftentimes, for example, it might be an overtime issue. The employee was qualified, in other words, not exempt from the overtime requirements, and worked a certain number of hours that would have included some overtime hours. The employer knows the employee worked those overtime hours and yet paid the worker at the regular rate instead of the overtime rate for all those hours.
Okay.
That would be a pretty easy case for the agency to show that the employer willfully failed to pay all wages due upon termination.
Thank you.
Okay.
In the third subsection of 652.150, it talks about a willful violation of the law. The Bureau's rule went on to say in its definition of willfully that an act or omission is willful even if the person did not know the act or omission was a violation of the final wage laws. In my judgment, a willful act is really different from a willful violation of the law. The rule said that you could have a willful violation of the law even if the person did not know that the act or omission was a violation of the law. That didn't make sense to me, that you could have a willful violation of the law and not know what the law required and not know that the law even existed. So I found, to the extent that the Bureau's rule defining willfully also defined a willful violation of the law to include a circumstance when the employer didn't even know what the law required, to go beyond the intent of the statute.
Right. So literally what we're trying to do with the A9 amendment is kind of get out of that whole discussion about what's willful, what isn't willful, and just simply say that it doesn't apply if one or more times in the year before the employee's employment ceased, yada yada, or terminated one or more employees on the same date.
That's right.
And in that sense, there's an assumption that the employer knows or should know that they have to pay all wages to its owners.
Mr. Chair, that language takes the word willfully out before willfully violated those wage statutes. It should be remembered, though, that the other part of the statute still requires a willful failure to pay. So the agency or a complainant is still going to have to show that the employer willfully failed to pay the wages and that kind of violation happened one or more times in the year before this employee's
employment. So it still hooks back to the willful.
Yeah. So it's still, you're still going to have a willful act, just no longer a willful violation of law, which is very difficult to prove, I would think.
Okay.
There are just proof problems.
Right. Everybody tracking? Everybody happy? Anybody out there have heartburn over this? No? Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Burdy.
This would seem to only apply, and maybe I just missed this at a legislative council committee, but this only applies to salespeople. And I thought that it was a broader problem than that.
Mr. Chair and Senator Burdick, the new subsections 3 and 4 of House Bill 3544, that amends 652150, deal with commissioned salespeople. The statute generally applies to any employer. And in the subsection 3, what's being renumbered subsection 5 in the bill, is not limited to just salespeople.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Are we ready to march the work session?
Mr. Chair, there is one more piece,
okay,
that's the second part of the amendment, and that's to deal with the problem that we saw in the Bureau's rule dealing with multiple simultaneous terminations.
Okay.
Their rule said that limitation on penalty wages didn't apply in the case of multiple simultaneous terminations. The reason we've got a problem with that is that a violation of the law doesn't happen until usually a day or maybe 5 days after a termination. The statute says that limitation doesn't occur only when there are violations that happen in the year before the termination. So if you've got a termination that happens on Monday, and then you've got the failure to pay, which is the violation of the law that happens on Tuesday, in my judgment, it'd be a rare circumstance that somehow that termination, even if there were multiple simultaneous terminations, that violation could have happened in the year before these employees' termination. It just didn't make sense. There's one scenario where it could possibly happen, but it really, you'd be having to talk about serial terminations that all happen on the same day. But as a matter of their rule to make a flat exemption from the limitation in 652.150, it seemed to me to be beyond the scope of the statute. The amendment A9 in what would be the new subsection 5B is intended to address that and simply say flatly that limitation does not apply when the employer terminated one or more employees on the same date that the employee's employment ceased. So if there's multiple terminations on the same day, the employer fires the whole crew, then this limitation on penalty wages would not apply.
And you still hook back into the willful issue.
Yes, there would still have to be a willful failure to pay.
Right. All right. We're ready to march through. I'm sorry, Senator Ringo.
I'm happy to adopt all these amendments. I guess I'm a little bit cautious. And Senator Burdick raised some questions as to what was going on the House side, and the response was rather cryptic. And I guess before moving the bill, I would kind of like to have some of those I'd like to have more information about that. That's just
about why the bill isn't moving in the House.
Yeah, why the six.
I would feel more comfortable knowing, I guess, knowing all sides of this rather than half of it. Just
we can do that.
Yeah.
So I guess with that we'll adjourn. Yeah, I'd like to know where. Yeah. We're all just waiting.